don't get the video going.
She's here.
She's here. Tina, what are you doing here?
Can't you be in two places at once? What's wrong with this thing?
It's okay.
How late is your meeting, though? That was an interesting issue.
Time to
love him,
Paul.
I don't remember. I think it was before 10.
Oh.
Well, if you, so you have a phone?
Yes.
Because I'm going to need
I gave
Larry's
you another
soul,
plug.
So if you want to.
Thank
you. Well, so let me call.
Alice Maroney's always helped me.
Yeah. Alice and Marge said that they, because I went out with them afterward, they said they will be happy to make calls for you.
For planning purposes, we have an 11:30 p.m.
Right. This should not take. Good morning, everybody. Okay? Everybody stay dry.
Ready?
No is set? This the agenda?
I guess she should be down there.
So is it here?
We're having to your public safety people.
I'm public.
No, the commissioner and the deputy.
Larry Soule's supposed to be here also. So we're going to start. We'll do a budget. And I don't see your item on the budget. So it's the 4.
Oh,
okay. We can start?
Okay. You can start.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. It is 10 minutes after 10, Monday, August 29th. On behalf of Chairman Alvarado, I will call the Budget and Appropriations Committee to order. And
Angela's going to be Larry's son.
Okay. Okay. Well, if you call me to committee to order anyway.
Good morning, all. 10:12, and I'm calling the Community Services Committee meeting to order. We have in attendance Legislator Shimsky, Legislator L. Williams, and Legislator Burton.
Okay, so very good. So we have two committees. In addition to that, at this time I will call my committee to order, Committee of Public Safety and Security. So I think first, since the commission is here, we'll do the public safety and budget items first. We just have a couple. Just let me say the first item on the public safety agenda, and I guess not second item on the budget agenda, is the Hudson Valley County's Interoperable Communications Consortium.
That's
not that. I know, so I'm saying. So this is, we are not going to take that up this morning. We have again requested someone from the Department of Emergency Services. Obviously, there's a lot of issues going on this morning, but nevertheless, this is the second time that we did request someone from the administration, from the Department of Emergency Services, to review this with us. We have previously acted on this item. But this particular item is an act authorizing the county to enter into an agreement, and I feel it's important that someone from the administration be here to discuss it with us. And I don't think it's overly controversial, but nevertheless, we'd like to work with the administration, and so we will not pursue that act until the appropriate representative of the ES is here. So that we'll put that aside. Pleased to have Commissioner Chivenko here this morning, Commissioner of Corrections. Introduce your.
This is Carlos Zilkin, Deputy Commissioner of Corrections, and you know Angela Owens.
Right. Good morning. We have a. Let me quickly do the prison transportation, because that's also one item, and we'll get that out of the way. Again, as we've done many other communities, this obviously was actually my hometown of Harrison, an intermunicipal agreement. To provide the reimbursement for prisoner transports. I'd be curious to know how many prisons we have in the town of Harrison, just for my own personal purpose, how we're doing at Harrison.
It's a rough town.
So I'm looking for, it's 4, 5, 5, 8, and 207. Now, we do this by zones, right? This is $207 per round trip, but this is Harrison's in the particular zone. But that is the amount of money. It's not to exceed $54,000. This is a 2-year agreement, right? From January 1st, 2011 through December 31st, 2012. And it goes up slightly in 2012. Commissioner, anything you want to add to the report in front of us? Everything is straightforward.
I would only say that I would recommend that we go ahead with this contract because it's more cost-effective to contract out with the local police than it is for corrections and transport.
For the folks who may be watching, it is, so in my understanding, I believe that's that this is a county responsibility to transport prisoners from all the various local, well, from our correctional facility to all the local jurisdictions, the courts, and back and forth. That is a county responsibility. With many municipalities, we have arrangements like this where we pay the municipality to provide that transportation. As the commissioner just stated, from time to time you look at this and you feel it's more cost effective for us to contract with the local municipality and use their police force, essentially their police force. I assume they use police officers to do this. Do they have to use police officers, or they feel that's the appropriate, because well, you're dealing with prisoners, and I assume that's the appropriate.
All the municipalities use police officers. Mm-hmm. Except I believe the town of Pelham uses constables.
Okay, and do you happen to know off the top of your head, it's not going to be how many trips a year Harrison makes, or it's just per, this is, we have a price per trip, and it's, whether it's 10 trips or 150 trips, it's
right.
The same thing?
Well, the number of court trips is three prisoners a week that they transport.
Three prisoners per week. They meet Tuesday mornings, maybe sometimes Friday mornings. Okay, any questions for any members of the committee? Mr. Williams.
Yeah, this question I have does not necessarily relate directly to this particular legislation, Commissioner, but I do have a concern. As you know, the county entered into an agreement about a year ago, I believe, last year, with Mount Vernon Hospital for purposes of transporting prisoners to the hospital for medical treatment after the contract, I believe, with the Westchester Medical Center terminated. To fulfill that. As you know, I was opposed to that agreement publicly, and I have been getting quite a few concerns raised by residents of my community that they are, when they go to the emergency rooms with their children, they are prisoners in shackles, oftentimes sitting in the emergency room. I understand the need for medical treatment, but I'd like to know whether there's any plans on dealing with that so that perhaps there's some way that you can get the prisoners into the for medical services without having that situation. I'm sure that residents throughout this county, if they were similarly put in those positions, would be concerned if they're going for medical treatment in their emergency room and their prisoners sitting there shackled at the same time. I'd like to know what's being done to kind of address that.
Yeah, well, that's a standard practice, and that's done whether it's a county prisoner. Remember, state prisons use Mount Vernon Hospital, their emergency room. It's a standard practice in the Westchester Medical Center. You know, when we bring prisons down, we stage where the hospital tells us to stage. There's no separate area aside from that. But they are in shackles. There is two correctional officers on top of them, so it's not a safety concern.
Then if I may, to your point, I mean, I think it's a good point for the committee on public safety, and we may do this with budget, I'm not sure, but we will be, in the next couple of weeks, we're scheduling a meeting on the whole relationship of the new corporation that's taken over the healthcare. And that whole operation, obviously tied into that, because I gather it's that corporation that made the contract, I think this is true, that made the contract with Mount Vernon, they could go anywhere, I guess, and they made a contract with Mount Vernon Hospital. Part of that process, I gather, we have correction officers participate in that transfer, right? But I mean, the contractual agreement,
right,
and it deals with this private company that runs it. So the issue you're raising of what's going on and how and when and what, I'm happy to pursue that and go into that.
I would just like also,
when we go through that whole process.
Right, to be pursued. It's not, I had not been consulted as a member of this board before that contract was entered into. And that was one of my objections, because I thought that I should have at least been given the courtesy as a legislator for that district to be told that that was something that was going to be there.
Well, Lynn, this is between that private company and...
Yeah, but the county is a part of the agreement.
Okay.
The county actually entered into the agreement also. Yeah.
Okay.
But there was... And the concern is not necessarily about public safety, per se, because I am sure that you would have adequate amount of officers. But I just think that I get calls from, I know, as a matter of fact, most recently by a resident who has a 3-year-old and I think a 5-year-old in the emergency room at the same time. And obviously, children are traumatized by seeing these situations. And I know that it's to say it happens all over, it's that might be so. I don't know if in White Plains Hospital or any of the other hospitals in the county we have that situation. If we do, wherever it is, it ought to be done a little more sensitivity to the residents, wherever they may be. That's all that I'm asking, in that if there is any way you can find so that you can probably propose some way of alleviating that situation, I'd appreciate if you would pursue that.
Well, what we were doing is we were staging prisoners up on a secure ward.
Yeah.
And we were told that we couldn't do it, but we'll revisit, try to find the
stage. I'd appreciate that. Okay. Thank you.
And we'll follow up on that, Linda. I think that's a good
Why were you told you couldn't do it?
The state didn't want us to just bring prisoners up there, you know, that weren't admitted to the ward. So.
But how were you doing it beforehand?
Well, it's New York State Docs that runs the secure ward down here, so we have to go by their rules.
Is that Mount Vernon Hospital?
Is it Mount Vernon Hospital, correct.
So they have to be actually admitted before you can take them into ward. That's what they're telling you.
And that's the same thing at the Westchester Medical Center also. You know, we can't stage them up on the ward.
They would have some...
Mr. Nolan.
So when we used to take them to the Westchester Medical Center as opposed to Mount Vernon, it was the same deal? We couldn't take them to we had to take them to the emergency room first to get admitted?
Correct.
The same thing?
And we still use the medical center, too.
Oh, okay.
We use both, so...
I would just think from a safety point of view, it might be easier if you wind up having rules that would allow for immediate admission as opposed to having to.
Exactly.
I would agree with Linda, whether it was Mount Vernon, Mount Bronxville,
right.
South Salem,
wherever,
it doesn't matter. I don't think exposure to that to children or anybody is probably the right thing to do. So.
No, so again, I commit to you that we will pursue that as we have all the folks in to talk about the whole
thing. I just wanted to raise, I know he has the challenge of trying to do this, and I'd like, you know, for him also to get a chance to really think it out, and I'm sure there will be solutions that can be come back.
Okay. Mr. Burroughs.
Maybe this was asked, and I apologize for coming late, but did you have to, in anticipation of this hurricane/storm, was there anything that you had to do with regard to prisoners? I understood that some of the prisons, they had the ones that were classified more risky, they had to take prisoners out of those prisons or cells and move them, relocate them to someplace else. Did you have to do anything like that?
No, we didn't have to relocate anybody.
Okay, Mr. Harper.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
On this, please, I want to move this point.
First of all, I support this. These are always good deals. If you want a motion, consider it a motion.
Okay.
A question to put on the table, and Commissioner, if you're not prepared to answer at this time, perhaps maybe we could have him back to the Budget Committee, but last week we had Budget Director Soule give a second quarter forecast, and he said that overtime for Department of Corrections was up. So if you're not prepared to answer it now, or if you can give us a thumbnail sketch of why overtime is up and what we're doing to address that.
Okay. Overtime is up for, you know, several reasons. Number one is the number of suicide watches that we're required to do by the state. It has been significantly up, and the reason for that is that suicide statewide has been significantly up. So suicide watches is one area. You know, our population is a little higher than it was last year, so that's another area. You know, time usage like FMLA is up. The number of job injuries are up. So it's really a combination of all of that.
And getting back to the issue of transporting to Mount Vernon Medical Center, in the past we used to go across the street, basically.
Right.
And now we're driving down. Has that had an impact on overtime?
It's had a slight impact. Actually, in that area, we're actually spending less money in transportation costs because we're doing less trips to the hospital under CCS.
Why? How does that correlate?
Because with the medical center, it was a lot easier for the doctors and stuff at the medical center to say, you know, you're right next door, just transport them over. So with the new contract, they're doing a lot more managed care in-house.
Again, to the members of the committee, all good questions, and I think we want, that's why I've scheduled this for public safety. It's probably because it's going to be with budget. It's with budget, but it's a budget to go into all these things, how and why, what kind of care, how much care, where the services are being used. I want to go into that. You know, the contract's been in effect for the year. There's a 45-day, there's twice a year they're supposed to issue a report. Each 6 months, and they got 45 days into the 6 months. So the first report should already be prepared. I waited to the second 45 days from July 26, whatever it was, so we can try, hopefully, may or may not be ready, but again, public safety will go into that whole contract and all these issues that Gordon just raised with, so we'll get there. I have a motion second for public safety. I need a motion second for budget on the prison transfer.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Ryan, second by Mr. Byrne. Okay, so the motion other way. Mr. Noner, Mr. Williams?
No, it was just a motion.
Okay, thank you.
This has to do with the meeting coming up on the contract. Can you make sure the contract's included in the package?
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point.
Yeah, sure.
Now, I understand you to say that after the first 6 months under the new contract, we were to be presented by the contractor with a report?
Well, the contractor, right, so the contract's supposed to be prepare a report after 6 months. They have 45 days at the end of that 6 months. I have not seen it. I've just been going through the contract in preparation.
The commissioner.
Well, maybe, I guess we're prepared for the commission. I'll ask the commission, did you get that first report? The first?
I did get one report.
Correct. Yeah, so right, as of now, one report has been due to the commission. I'm not sure if the contract says the board's supposed to get a copy. I don't know the details.
But say that we want
it? Well, there's a contract in place, signed, sealed.
So on or about February 15th, February,
a report should have, pursuant to the contract, should have been done. The commissioner's acknowledging that he probably has it. That was one of the documents. Probably should have asked for before now, but as I'm getting, I didn't know that report was in. I want to give him a year, and then after the first year, let's bring this new company in and see what's going on. And in my research, we discovered that at the 6 months, there should have been a report generated. And presumably it has been, but I think the contract says to the commissioner, so presumably the commissioner has it. I decided since we're close to the year, another 45 days, we get a second report. So I put my meeting off till, I think it was September 19th. I counted the 45 days, and we'll be expecting, hopefully, that second report.
Are you asking for a copy of the report and second report? I think we should.
Well, yes, we get, because we've just been working with the administration to schedule this meeting. I think as of now, it's for September 19th, and we'll get all those documents. And
the contract and the report.
Yes, and that's going to be an important meeting. I mean, this is, we made a major change after all these years. There's some financial issues that we've come across in terms of some federal issues. So that will be an important meeting for public safety and presumably budget, and we'll go through that in detail. We'll get you documents ahead of time so you're all prepared. So as of now, it's for September 19th, I believe. That's why I don't want to get too sidetracked today, because we're going to go into those issues in detail. So with that, we have now motions and seconds for both committees. Any other comments? All in favor for both committees?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. So the IMA and the prison transportation is approved. We have one other item for the Department of Corrections, and that was somebody had a question on federal inmates. I know every year when we do the budget, we try to estimate what's the census of federal inmates. They give us a higher reimbursement, clearly, than the state does. Commissioner, you have that information with you today as to where we stand in the federal inmate revenues?
Yes, I do. Year to date, we're averaging 202 federal inmates, and the number of feds is high. For a couple of reasons. Number one, over the last year and a half, they had three very large raids, two in Newburgh and one in Yonkers, right, that increased the population by probably 80 prisoners. So we're averaging 202, and we anticipate generating revenue of about $11.5 million.
Yeah, so compared to the budget, what was the, do we have our budgeted number there for the revenue?
9.3,
so we're estimating a little over 11 million. Okay, well, that's, they have good news on the backs of
question, though.
Corrections, but yes, Mr.
Does that increased number of federal prisoners also translate to increased amount of overtime, or?
Well, it does, because as our census goes up, we have to go into additional housing areas.
So it'd be interesting to figure out the net, you know, what the net gain is.
The gross and then our expenses against that.
On that note, can't we go and transfer that extra cost to watch these prisoners to the federal government?
Well, it's a daily. Commission can tell us what the daily. There's a daily reimbursement rate. What is the daily reimbursement rate?
$160 a day.
So it's $160 a gourd. So whether you know, however we do our paper, we get $160,
right.
And then we have to deal with that. So
per
it's
day per prisoner. Right?
So $160 per day per federal inmate.
Right. Per day per federal prisoner commissioner.
And then we have a con because the state was like $34
a day. Tell the committee what was the state rate? What is the state rate?
The state rate is zero right now. It's parole violators. They pay $100 a day for any state ready prisoners mm-hmm. we keep over 10 days, mm-hmm. right? But we've only gotten about $7,000, I think, you know, from the state. We used to get about $1 million.
Our state readies over the years what approximately is our population number of state readies on averages?
At any one time, we can have 5 to 15 state ready prisoners in custody.
So correct. So there's zero reimbursement for the first 10 days, and if they stay more than 10 days, then they pay us $100 a day.
$100 a day, yeah. Over 10 working days.
Over 10 working days.
But they always take them out, you know, the 7th. Ninth day.
So we get nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, remind the committee a couple years ago we had to sue because they were paying us like $34. They were happy to keep them here because it cost them less. So they were just here for a long, long time. We actually had to sue to change our lease. Now they are on the case, and within 10 days they get a freebie because they get them out.
Yeah, they were reimbursing us $37.40 a day for parole violators. And, you know, they cut that out in 2009.
Yeah. So we get zero. To zero, right?
So we get zero. So zero for parole violators and 10 days, it's $100 for state readies.
Over 10 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about parole violators? What's the population there? Is
it? We're averaging 60, 65 a day in custody for technical violators.
So that's one of those examples where we were getting reimbursed. State fixed their budget by cutting us back to zero. These are examples I give to my constituents. It's a whole list of, you know, how the state looked. Back what April they announce, fix their problems, no new tax, they're great. They don't tell you these are the various steps they take. The state takes to meet their budget. They just cut us back to zero. So Bill sees us around the state.
Put this into further context, and also to bring just a little piece of history in here. Just for this morning, let me just go back into the 90s. The argument that has been made by commissioners around the state, by legislators, by everybody at the county level, was that the rate that was in the law was terribly inadequate. And especially in counties like Westchester, where just regional cost differentials enter into the picture, it was so far below our costs. And we have worked for decades to get the state to adjust that figure. The Fed figure has been much fairer. The state has lagged behind. It's always part of our annual discussion with the state, but not only us. All of these converging pressures of counties around New York talking to Albany about the financial burden they're putting on us just in this area and to do something about it, to step up and properly reimburse us. The Albany response is to take action that actually cuts us further, reduces further the amount of assistance they should, actually not assistance, the amount of payment they should be making pay us for the services that we are providing. So it's just another example of how they continue to take advantage of us, and it's got to bother everybody around the table to hear the spin that comes out of Albany about how they've closed the budget gap, as you mentioned, how they've tightened things, they've improved things. They've
shut down
their
state
costs.
Prisons.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut down state prisons.
And most of it is being done balanced on the backs of county property taxpayers.
Right. Actually, we have the budget director here. I don't know, Larry, if you want to, we're talking dollars. You want to come to the table, if anything you have to add, we're just, you know, commissioner's doing a good job so far, I guess, but he's going through the numbers. But you want to.
Sorry, I'm a little late.
No problem. Please come.
I was asked to talk about the federal, you know,
yes, we're just,
I know the commissioner knows.
Going into those numbers, the reimbursement's $160 a day, and I gather we're projected to actually make a couple of million dollars on this program?
Yeah, I think we'll...
Gross?
We have actually budgeted this year $9.3 million in revenues, and we'll probably, what we adjusted our forecast up, because our census is higher than the budgeted number, to 10.6, but it potentially could be higher because our, you know, where our census is right now, you know, the recent rate, we have, I guess, 27, you know, prisoners from that. So, you know, I guess one of the issues is, though, if, and you know this, if the census goes up above a certain level over, for overall prisoner population, then you have to use the swing space in the annex, which costs more in terms of overtime. So that's an issue that you have, you know, because we are getting close to that number right now. So that's an issue to look at.
With our contract with the federal government, can we say no more, call Nassau, we've hit this capacity that we were comfortable with and we can turn them down, or do we have to take them and go into the annex?
No, we don't have to take them. I've spoken to the U.S. Marshals Service and said that we would take the last batch of prisoners, the 27, with the caveat that if our census increases, that we have to turn them back over to the federal custody.
Okay, so hopefully we won't have to go into the annex, but at the same time, we can't sit here and think, geez, we might make $13 million. You know, we're just going
right.
to keep growing. If we grow beyond a point, the cost, someone pointed out the cost for John's point. Is
I was wondering if the
go ahead, Mr.
Larry can tell us, with respect to the projection of 10.6, if you factored in what the corresponding overtime increases to that we incur by handling those extra inmates. Is it possible to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we're below that 1,500 mark, so, you know.
So there's no other overtime then?
Well, I mean, I guess there...
There's been overtime costs, and there's been overtime escalation. Is it due directly to the federal prisoners? No, as you heard the commissioner explain earlier, they had, you know, increased weather overtime in the first 3 months of this year. They had increased suicide watch. They had increased people out on 207C. Which they didn't have last year.
Is it fair to say then that you can't actually just determine how much exact overtime is
relates to or attributable to
the federal prisoners, because it's part of there are other factors that are affecting the overtime.
I would agree with that statement.
Okay.
Right, so the numbers just go into our census. So overtime is based on like that 1,500. Right. As long
that's it. The issue is if we kick into the over 1,500 and have to move into the annex and have to have more people.
If you look at today's census, they're actually over 1,500. They're about 1,517.
But we're not in the annex.
It's controllable. And usually the summer months, we do see an increased census. Things tend to slow down on getting prisoners processed. And our census tends to go up. This is trend. Hmm. This is normal trend for us. The other positive thing, and if I may, Commissioner, but, you know, we did have a new class hit the blocks the second week of August. That's going to help the overtime situation, since whatever shortage they came out of the year in, this will now
Because of the retirement incentive.
I think it was multiple issues. I mean, we have retirement regardless of the incentive on an annual basis from that population, because it's 20 and out. So it's, you know, it's just by attrition that they do go. And, you know, we needed to backfill. And this year we did a class, and they hit the blocks August 15th. So that should help on our projections of overtime. We did not have that in the second quarter. So projecting overtime on the amount of, you know, vacant positions that we were covering, and trying then to look at the federal prisoners as it relates to that, it's a mix. And your statement is absolutely correct.
That's helpful.
In terms of overall
I was just asking the increase in federal prisoners as a result of the raids. Those are drug raids, I assume?
Immigration.
Well,
no. We don't
that would be a crime. Immigration could come to our
country. No, it's drugs. It's RICO.
Yeah, exactly. They busted on like 80 people.
Yeah. It's RICO.
Thanks. Thank you.
Mr. The census of your staff, how many vacancies are you? Are you below staffing now with this new class? Where do you stand versus the budget and numbers? Are you still holding some vacancies?
I think they have a couple of now with the class being added, we have a few sergeants and captains that have remained vacant all year. Although that has attributed it to some of the salary remaining steady, it's hurt us on the overtime side. Two captains, two sergeants that have remained vacant. We've had, obviously, vacancies due to 207C, so even putting the class on doesn't necessarily create a vacancy backfill, because we have to, those people will come back eventually, but we have to make up that difference. They're just out on sick leave.
To the budget director, Larry, do you give, not only Commissioner Chaburka, but all commissioners, but specific corrections, based on you're running the budget numbers, a number you need to hold so many vacancies, you need to create costs? I mean, do you have a dialogue as to where your staffing is? You keep track of what they're doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly
for your purposes?
Certainly we have those conversations on an ongoing basis, but then, you know, to reduce the staffing levels, you know, the commissioner would have to get approval from the state in terms of reducing the number of
right. This particular department, he has some state requirements.
Exactly.
And so it's more difficult in corrections than maybe other areas. I mean, I'm concerned, frankly, it's that there's sufficient staffing. This is safety issues.
Right.
But the state actually has regulations in place, so the commissioner can't go below a certain
level. Well, I don't know if it's, I mean, you can explain this better than I can, but I don't know if it's a hard and fast rule, but you have to get approval, don't you, to reduce your...
Yeah, the New York State Commission of Correction sets the minimum staffing levels. Mm-hmm. So they set the number of security posts that we have to man on a given day.
So you have to use overtime if you're not reaching that number. You have to use overtime to get to those minimums.
That's correct. So when vacations are high, when sick time leave is high, job injury time is high, we have to backfill those positions on overtime.
And you will be giving there will be an exam given, I guess, in the spring. Is the plan
next spring? Yeah.
Next spring to create a new list, you know, to hire from.
Mr. Harkin, did you have a...
Thanks, Mr. Chair. No, it's just referring back to what Legislator Nona was commenting about the net on the federal prisoner housing. There is a county in New Jersey that a couple weeks ago there was a lot of controversy because they made a contract with the federal government to really kind of go into the business of housing federal prisoners because they had excess capacity. And I'm certainly not advocating that. It's a controversial measure, you know, for a local government to kind of be making money off of that, but there are pros and cons. But it goes to Legislator Nona's point about we really need to figure out what the net is with housing of federal prisoners.
At least at the local level, we need to figure out how to get a lot of these folks into alternatives.
Yeah.
Get into jail, get them out of our system into some better alternatives.
But probation.
I hear you saying, I mean, the federal prisons is one thing, but we need to, especially we have, what is about 1,100, your census of pre-trial. I mean, one of my bones of contention all these years is a good portion of that 1,500 census is pre-trial.
Right.
And so the whole bail reform, and, you know, not they don't all deserve bail, but...
Well, the federal prisoners are all pre-trial,
federal's
they have their own system.
Federal's
so.
Right. But ours, we have well over 1,000, I'm sure, is a pre-trial.
Yeah, it's usually in the 900s.
Yeah, and I don't know, just it's an ongoing, I think someday someone's going to figure out a way we can lower our census by having alternatives, get them out on bail, whatever. But anyway, that's for another day. Any other,
not just for those who are viewing to make sure that my comments are taken in light of what my position has been with respect to prisoners and the social utility of, I don't want to appear to be rejoicing about the numbers, because I think that whenever, from our societal standpoint, we have to be spending more money to lock people up, obviously there is a concern that whether we should be finding ways, and I know we do work to do that, to get away from that having to spend so much effort in putting people in jail rather than effort in putting them back to work and making them useful members of our society. But I do want to focus a little bit on the numbers you gave us. You said there were 202 federal inmates, and I think the chairman mentioned it's $160 per day per inmate. The $11,500,000, what does that, if you... You, is that 202 times 160 times 365? Roughly, that's the number. That's
the
math.
It's based on 200.
Okay.
200 times 160 by 365.
Okay. So in your budget number, Larry, of 9.3, the $9.3 million were budgeted increase in federal prison. Might not.
It was.
Okay.
2010 was budgeted at 130.
That's 130.
That assumed 160, so an increase of 30. I think, you know, the board may have added an additional to the number that was proposed as well. I don't remember exactly.
Okay, we had added some additional number.
Yeah, based on the recommendation.
Based on the recommendation. Now, this is the number you gave us, 11, is year to date. So
yeah, it's projecting the year to the end of the year.
Oh, it's projected out?
Yes. Yes. So it's not a year-to-date revenue number.
Okay, so the 202 is not your actual number. What is your actual?
The 202 is the actual average for the first 7 months of this year through July.
For the first 7 months. Okay.
Right, and April, May, and June of this year, our census went from, in the 200s down to 199, 198, 196. So when I was looking at second quarter forecast,
right,
I tried to adjust for the fact that perhaps our census was going to go on a decline on the feds, not knowing we were going to have raids. It's hard to predict that.
So,
trying to be conservative as the second quarter, we did not project $2.6 million worth of increased revenue. We projected 1.3 because we know we would at least get that based on the census.
Right. But I want to focus on the 11.5 million, which is a 202 number.
Yes.
That 202 number is actually based on the amount, you talk about the arrest in Yonkers and in Newburgh. That's actually based on those statistics.
The actual prisoners in-house every month average through the month of July.
Right, okay. And that occurred through the month of July?
Correct.
So these are year-to-date numbers?
Yes.
So in other words, your actual number to year end can be higher than this number?
Or lower, depending on...
How would it be lower?
If we don't get any more raids...
But for instance, if you look at the first quarter, January was 208, then it was 215, in February 214, and then in June it dropped down to 187. So the number, moves around a little bit, but that's an average with the first quarter that had some higher numbers in it.
Okay, I see what you're saying, but give me a sense of given a 202, these are actual prisoners. How does that number go down if nothing else happens?
Yeah.
Assuming nothing else happens.
As the cases proceed to the federal courts,
okay,
and they're adjudicated, we'll be releasing prisoners. One of the other reasons for the high population is right now the federal district court in White Plains has a backlog of about 100 criminal cases.
Okay.
So they're going to start adjudicating them and getting those prisoners out. So we don't expect our number to increase. We expect it to decrease.
Okay, so just to stay
with
the...
It's all pre-trial.
No, I understand, but there is an assumption in here. To decrease, you've got to assume that there would be, that these cases will be adjudicated within the next year, and therefore you're going to have, for instance, some dismissals, and those dismissals then reduce your number. That's what you're saying.
Right, and some convictions where they'll move the prisoners out to...
To a different location. But the underlying assumption is that these cases, the ones that have increased, are going to be disposed within the next year.
Right.
One way or another.
Yeah, for example, one of the first raids that we had was towards the beginning of 2010. Mm-hmm. That was a big Newburgh raid.
Right.
They've been in custody for a year and a half, so we expect... Those prisoners will start being adjudicated.
Oh, okay. So, okay. For a year. Okay.
Yeah, Lyndon, I can think when we do come November, is when we you're doing your numbers now. Come when we look at the budget for next year, one of the issues we'll have to address is what is the forecast? Larry and the commission will share with us, what is the forecast for the year 2012 of these federal inmates? Are based on.
Right. Yeah.
See how they're going down. Yeah. To your point, they'll start to be dismissed. So will the number next year be 190 and not 202, or will it be 210? Mm-hmm. We'll have to take a snapshot in time in November, what's going on, and what do we project the feds will do next year? How many of those in the system will be dismissed or convicted and out? And are they going to be replaced and how fast? So that's a budget, that's a judgment we'll make in November. But having this discussion now helps
Mr. Chairman, but I wanted to get to a sense of what the 11.5 million is, and I think the commissioner explained that this is our year-to-date number, and I wanted to see whether that goes up, and I think what you're saying is that could go up or it can go down, depending, going down would depend upon the disposition of the cases that are in the pipeline.
That's based on a projection of an average daily rate of 200 prisoners,
right,
which I wouldn't expect that we're going
to go higher than that. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions at this time? We'll probably revisit this issue come budget time, as we see what's going on.
Mr. General.
Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, sir. And I apologize for not hearing the entire discussion, and I know that Commissioner, that there was some discussions on part of the initial question that we were asking about the revenue for federal inmates. Can you tell us, Commissioner, do you, Ms. Chamberlain, Commissioner, can you tell us whether the feds have come to us and asked us for additional space outside the ones that we were, we allocated in the budget, I guess, in 2010, and during the year it said, hey, you know, we want to take more. I know that Mr. Harcum talked about the New Jersey scenario.
Mr. Jenkins, if I can, we say, in fact, because we did cover some of this, and it's almost the reverse. We have told the U.S. Marshal that we're at a point that our cost, if you have to open up the annex, our cost may go up. It may not be cost effective for us to go beyond a certain number. So the message we were getting from the commissioners, we're pretty much at our limit. We really don't want any. You've already told the marshal that
we've budgeted for 160 federal prisoners. We have, in fact, you know, brought in additional prisoners.
You know, we're not looking for more business, I understand it, because it affects our operations.
Correct. Right. There's another problem with it, too, is that the federal courts require us to give the prisoners access to law libraries and computers. You know, they turn over all their evidence and discovery electronically now on CDs. Mm-hmm. And we're at a point that even though we're operating the law libraries on a day shift and an evening shift, we're just running out of, you know, space and time to accommodate, you know, that access to their legal materials.
Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of just feds, it's also discovery as become more and more
Brady, Brady material.
Do we have as budget in public safety, do we have a breakout from us from law cost, right, for providing that? So in other words, is there a chart that says, ten inmates, you know, federal inmates, that here's the cost as they're broken out, too, so that we can see, Mr. Chairman, the revenue that is derived from that versus the actual cost, you know, by a unit, like some kind of unit that makes some sense. Well, I mean, I don't know how many people in a block that, if you had to open a block.
Mr. Jenkins, can I think, you know, I appreciate where you're going, and I think, Mr. Noner, we sort of, again, went down that road a little bit, too. Again, from my experience, year after year, we have a number from the federal government. It was 130, we got up to 160, we can negotiate a number. It certainly could be helpful, but, you know, it's based, we went through the overtime numbers, there's a census, whether it's 1,500 or 1,450, and to spend time to break out, the federal inmate is now just in the system. If we go to 1,530, we have to open up the annex. At some point, now you can see costs directly related. As I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, directly related to bringing more federal inmates or any other inmates. We go over a certain number, we have to expand our operations. Costs come in below that capacity. We just have, we have numbers, and I guess we can try. They need to break out line by line, but John asked if we get an overtime number associated with the federal inmates. And it's a little different.
That's the point again. Because it's not necessarily an overtime number. I mean, when we're looking, I guess, is the straight numbers. Like if we open up a block, whether we go into the annex or anywhere else, you open up a block means this amount of money, right?
But there's a cost for the shift, a unit of shift, the cost for food, the cost for
right. And that's what I'm saying. That's a cost, and to see, all right, and if the federal revenue from that is going to exceed or not exceed that, that's a different issue, obviously. But we want to see what that is, because as opposed to saying to the federal government, like, all right, wait, look, we're getting close to our number, we can't take anymore, right? And this is a good thing, I guess, that people come in and out every day, so that there's always some level of flexibility. But I'm not sure that we want the message to come across, at least I'm not sure we want the message to come across and say, don't call us, right, on this scenario. Why don't you check with us first as opposed to seeing it? And I'm not sure if that was what came across, and not putting words in anyone's mouth. We said to the federal marshals, according to testimony, that we're at our threshold, we're near our threshold, skip over us on the call. Right? I don't think that we would want to forego potential revenue if we're within that thing, and if a block cost is 50% of the cost that we're going to get from revenue, well, guess what? Open the block, right? So I mean, that's the kind of questions that we have, because it's not all straight overtime, is it? Well, no, it's not. It's not. No, if you
let him answer the question.
I'm sorry. I'm watching people shake their head.
He asked the question. The answer.
Gordon knows it for a long time.
We have We have almost daily communication with the U.S. Marshal Service regarding the population numbers and other issues with them. So there is communication going back and forth. When our census drops, we can accommodate more feds up to a certain level, right? Our census is high right now. So, for example, even if they were to call me and say, you know, you want to take an additional 40 feds, you know, I wouldn't be able to accommodate that.
Without opening up a new block?
Well, that, we'd have to go into more expensive swing space, not just a typical housing unit. For example, if we had to go into the basement of the jail annex, it would cost me 15 officers a day on overtime.
That was a question, because again, the question is, if we opened up a new block, right? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't do that on overtime. We would say this is another shift, basically, right? We wouldn't.
No, we would do it on overtime because we don't have the staff regularly.
Did we just, how many new officers did we just bring
we
in?
We went through 24.
So we brought in 24 new officers, and we don't have capacity.
He's doing it.
If we opened up. That's what I'm saying. We need to see the.
Well, I think I think maybe what the public safety committee will do. I'll try to do is because over the years I've heard different things, maybe through the budget committee, that I forget the shift is four officers to a block, a shift, whatever. But two prisoners, we can open up another. It's not with the young, you know, two prisoners go in and you have to have
a block. Yeah.
So it's not cost effective if you have that one extra person or two extra people. But at some point, maybe we can run through the commission the whole economies of scale of how that works. Is you have a is it four? What is on a shift? What is on a block? How many people do you have to have?
It depends on the housing unit. It could be one on each shift. It could be two on each shift.
I mean, over the years, I know Commissioner Posey used to kind of go through this. And there's certain hard costs. You know, open up that block, and then what the soft course, over there's one inmate there, you can have up to maybe 10 or 15 on that block. But those, that's an operational thing, which the committee, we can go into.
It's operational, but it's also money, so we want to see that. So if we can just have that report to start there, and certainly, Mr. Chairman, through public safety, we could dig down into it further, you know, to find out whether or not, from a policy perspective, we wanted to enact something to say this is the right thing to do versus not listen to the professional, listen to our commissioner saying this is the right thing to do. All I'm suggesting right now is that we got to have at least the baseline number, because the assertion that at least I'm hearing, and maybe it's not correct, the assertion is that it would cost us more money than we would be bringing in as far as if we had to accommodate these folks on by opening up a block, etc. And whether we do that with overtime or not overtime, that obviously would be part of the equation as well. Because if we had to do it without overtime, maybe we're making money. And if we have to use overtime, maybe we're not. And I'm not sure. So if we could have those numbers, that would be helpful.
Well, I think the chairman's point is a valid one, that we need to monitor the situation. I think your response, Commissioner, is that you are monitoring the situation so that, you know, if there's money to be made, we make it. If we're going to lose money by taking more prisoners, we don't get into that situation. We don't want to get into that situation. So I think we're on the same page. It's a question of monitoring it, and maybe we want to.
But there's a marginal cost too. Yeah. I mean, these things are not difficult. I mean, mostly, I'm sure you know what the marginal cost is for opening one versus another, given, and their break-even points that I'm sure they have those numbers. So it's probably easier to probably present those so that we don't have to come back to you over and over again, because we have kind of a model that we know at X amount of points, you know, it's going to cost X versus Y. Yeah, I think that would be good to have those statistics.
Well, there's so many variables, because a lot of it depends on when the call comes from the marshals, and they do call. They never send anybody here or anything without calling first, and at that time we look at where we are in situation with the block. But a lot of it has to do with what our other general population is, how many we have there. That if we're down, we can take a few more feds without opening up another block.
Right.
If we're high like we are now, if they were to call now, it would be very difficult.
I think that's the chairman's point, and you know that statements we made, we're at a certain point, let's not take anymore. Ken's asking what's the analysis. I guess my perspective, I guess it's good to know, but at the end of the day, speaking for myself, you know, I think hopefully both branches of this government are concerned about saving money, or making, if you will, making money on certain activities. And without trying to micromanage, I think between Larry and the commissioner, if I would hope that if you could make money by bringing more in, you would. But it's always fair for us to, to ask and make sure they're doing that. I said, there's so many variables, we may not know all the variables, different ages, different sex, different, you know, have to go different areas. But it's a point well taken. The board obviously is concerned about you maximizing your revenues, as I'm sure you, hopefully you are, have the same concern. So we'll hopefully work together as we go forward and try to figure all that out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? There's really nothing to take a vote on. It's just we're just getting
motion to adjourn.
Well, we have one item with community services.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think public safety is done. I can actually adjourn. Yes, I can adjourn.
I'm budget.
Moved by Mr. Noda, second by Mr. Byrne. All in favor?
All right.
So budget safety is now adjourned at 10:59. Public safety and security. We have one other item with budget and community services. I'll turn the
budget
meeting over to Legislator Chair Williams for the community service.
Item number 4564 on your agenda.
Labs and research items. Why would take one of the commissioner?
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Mr. Tuesday.